I, Sea Voyager, welcome to Eternum, an ancient land of fantastical legends. The Lore Seekers, three of the finest storytellers of the New World, await your arrival. They'll spin ye a tale of mystery and adventure. So grab an ale and rest ye self from your journey across the cursed seas.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome. This is Lore Seekers, the podcast for New World. This is episode 9, and we are your hosts. My name is Jibs, and I'm joined by Cash.
Heyo!
And Champ.
What's up, peeps?
And Solis.
Hello, Governor.
Gentlemen, what's going on? What's shaking, bacon?
Champ, I was really hoping for a what it do.
What it do?
What it do, baby?
I kept listening to that last episode as I was, you know, editing and kept hearing what it do. What it do?
If we're going to have somebody that completely bros out, it's going to be Champ.
It's going to be me. It's going to be me. Yeah, for sure, for sure. Might not look like it, but I might have grew up on the streets. I'm just saying.
You don't know me.
You don't know me. You know things I've been through.
Well, fellas, it has been a week.
It has.
I can't stop playing. I'm having a really hard time with having to adult because adulting effing sucks. Right now, I want to play all day long.
I understand that.
Yep. Yeah, it's always nice to have everything that we got going on in our adulting lives, but then we have nights like last night where we're able to go into a dungeon, which our expedition, which I know we'll get into later in the show, but those nights have been so amazing. They've been so much fun to get into.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
You know, what's great, too, is that we're going to lean towards doing a couple events here. We're actually going to announce that during the show. We're going to have a couple events this week for the company. So we're starting to get to where we're at a point where we can get the company going, start doing company events, getting everybody together, doing some of the fun things that we enjoy in the game. I'm super stoked about that.
Oh, right. Yeah. Portals. I know Portal Night's coming up. That's something we're going to be working on.
Might be soon. Maybe tomorrow.
Maybe
very soon.
And those are actually pretty lucrative. I mean, there's one of the things that you see advertised in chat all the time are those trains where people just hop in and they just go from corrupted portal to corrupted portal, and that actually is a really, really good time. So yeah, that's all I'll say about that. Yeah,
I've only been able to do that ever one time, and that was with Edgewood, who I think's in chat, during the open beta. I haven't been in there since open beta. I would love to run me some portals.
Speaking of Edgewood, I think everybody is really intrigued to know how he made level 61. Yeah. Like, I didn't even think that was possible.
Oh, he broke the game.
61?
Yeah.
He broke it.
What'd I miss?
Yeah.
Is he Max?
I believe so.
Is he the first in the company?
No, I think we had another. We've got a couple and a couple more getting pretty darn close. So
Jeffy hit 59.
He's going to hit 59 it tonight. Yeah, he's definitely going to hit it tonight.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we got a handful. It's either him, Sumna, Jeffy. Like, we're going to have somebody in there if they're not already.
Yeah. Jeffy's going to be world first. Lore Seeker first.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
I know, and the funny part is people are going to listen to this show, you know, when it releases, and they're going to be like, what are these guys even talking about? Like, I've been 60 for a week, and it's different. It's different, good friends, because, you know, lore seekers typically take our time and we, you know, go through stuff. Like myself, I'm almost 39 and I'm just cruising, but I can't guarantee, but I'm thinking that my crafting and my harvesting is probably higher than others.
Probably.
Other people.
I feel like I'm the lowest level here. I'm 33. Is there anyone that's 33? Is everyone higher? look at Chip. Look at the camera. Like, who does that?
Chip's disappointed. He's just disappointed.
You got to get those numbers up.
Yeah. I actually play the game like it's my my day job, and I have problems. I'm already going to AA for this. I've already got AA set up. I've already got it set up.
Yeah, Jibs, let us know if you need help on the beach. We'll come down there.
Yeah. He's still in first light.
Ooh, look at you guys go. Just leaning right in there, aren't you? I got two fingers. One for the both of you.
Kick him while he's down. Oh. Get him.
No, I've been, I think, a detour from leveling, and I've been really working on my professions. Been trying to get those to 100 because I'm at the Fen now. I call it the Fen for short. And there's something there specifically that I want to be able to farm whenever I kill it. And Champ, you know, I think you probably know what I'm talking about. The big old bear there.
Oh, yeah.
I want to be able to farm those, and I don't want to... I kept running into things, especially while I was down in Cutlass Keys, and there's certain things I couldn't get down there, and I'm like, all right. So I'm kind of all in right now on gathering and crafting.
Well, you know, I backed up and did the crafting stuff. Remember the gathering? I was talking to Cash, and I'm like, I'm going to take a step back, and I stopped questing, went back and made sure I got everything to 100, because... Who likes to walk by that blue tree and not chop it down?
Nobody.
Nobody.
I get mad.
So I went in that zone one time and I went, nope, back out. I went back down and exactly. I started, dude, I chopped trees for like 4 hours straight. Just singing songs in my head of the old times.
Oh, yeah. And shortly after, I think it was probably a day after or maybe 2 days after, I saw what you were doing, Champ, and I went, I have to do that because I don't want to get stuck behind. So I went back, he showed me some of his routes, and then I spent the better part of maybe three and a half days just doing that and really leveling stuff up. And I'll tell you what, you get a ton of mats and you got a lot of stuff that you can sell. You can get all, you can bring your crafting way up by doing that. But yeah, I spent those 3.5 days just harvesting and crafting, and it was very therapeutic and very worth it. But here was my mistake. I left logging for the last thing I did after all those days. And it got tedious. Like by the time I was done, I was just like, I'm popping a no doze. I'm not going to bed until I'm well over 100 on logging. And yeah, it took a while, but it was worth it. Totally worth it. Cause now, like as I level now, I can get everything.
Right.
So
see, that's where I want to be. Like, I want to be able to level, enjoy my leveling, be able to farm, you know, whatever the heck I want. Yeah. That's what I want. Yeah. And by the way, if you've rushed to 60, I mean, I'm not bagging on you. I'm not bagging on that. If you're in a straight PvP and that's your thing, do your thing, you know? But I like going a slower pace because you only get, I mean, from my perspective, you only get that 1 to 60 once.
That's right.
I mean, I guess you really do here.
Yeah.
That's it.
One time.
We're so used to alts. I mean... And that being the norm, whereas here it's like that, you know, one and done kind of thing, at least now. So, you know, I'm just taking my sweet time. It's like a good barbecue here. Slow roast.
Right.
That's right.
Well, you know, what's funny is everybody was talking about the balancing between PvP from 1 to 60 and all that stuff. And I don't think anybody cares. I haven't heard anybody complain about it, you know, honestly, because it doesn't matter because you're going to get to 60 and everybody's going to be on an even playing field. So how cool is it when you go through First Light and you see a level 14 on your server? I'm not going to lie to you. When I see a really low level person in the starter zones, I get excited because I'm like, new people. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, and I've seen that already, which is nice because they obviously opened our server up after they closed it. So it's nice to see that. Plus, I have no desire to go fast either. Right. Like, and I'm that guy. I find the quickest route to the quickest this to the quickest that. I farm this, I farm that. I know where to stand and I know where to call home. Right. And I am completely different out of my element. And playing with K Champ has helped me do that because she's brand new. So I'll go from my, you know, the level 40 zones, level 50 zones down to the level 30 zones to run around and help her kind of progress her story and try to learn. And this has been a pretty good experience for me. You know, I really don't have any complaints. I really don't.
Right.
I think that's a funny perspective that you just brought up because you really are, you're probably one of the most hardcore gamers that I know. And and you bring that perspective to us. I mean, it's funny, just a little side note, like The Lore Seekers, we used to be like a good mix between, you know, casual players and stuff like that. We are not casual players. I'm telling you right now, we're not. We're super hardcore players. But like one thing, Champ, that I love to see, and I saw it today. What did you do as soon as you got home from work today? What did you do with K-Champ exclusively today?
I fished all day.
How cool is that?
I fished all day.
I love that.
I did this. We did the story fishing quests, and then we just fished, and it was peaceful. It was fun. And again, I know I'm going to talk about the sounds, but the music, the music, the ambiance, and I just got to Morningdale. Is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And it rains there.
Yeah.
And it is fabulous. While you're fishing and that rain is falling, then you can hear the wind blowing like through the trees. And again, not going to get stuck, but damn.
Yeah.
What it do, bruh? What it do?
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. Well, everyone who's tuning in, if you missed last week on the show, we talked Bezos' comments on New World, our take on the first week of New World. This week on the show, though, we're talking server transfers, because that's been a big thing. We're also talking our first time into Starstone Barrows, and then Cash is doing a lore lesson on...
This week, I'm really excited about this one. I'm excited about everyone, but I'm really excited about this one. We are doing our very first part one episode on the Ancients today.
It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, you're going to enjoy it.
It's huge.
Just another quick note, too. We released the lore lesson video for The Corrupted, and that is on YouTube, and folks seem to like it. So, yeah. Kat, don't forget, every single lore lesson that we put out is available in video format on YouTube, and the week after we release the lore lesson, the actual video, the week afterwards, we have a session where we will break down that video and we talk it out. We talk theory crafting and we talk about, you know, our speculation as to what we think the lore means and that. And then we will also release that as a video as well. So, and that's all available on YouTube.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. If you search New World Lore, I think we're one of the first three videos that pops up. So, I mean, you can find stuff pretty easily now.
We're definitely in there, which is kind of cool now.
Yeah, that's exciting. Well, gentlemen, I think it's safe to say we could just really dive right in. So the server transfer controversy, it's been going around. For those who don't know what's happened, essentially it was said on a tweet that you're going to be able to transfer between regions. Now that is not the case, and there's pitchforks and fire and egging going on. They're TPing people's trees. It's madness.
Yeah, it is madness. It's just one of those things. And you know, I think if you guys had listened to Eternum podcast, Solace's show, he really broke it down. So I'm going to lean pretty hard on him on this one, because he is a numbers guy. actually your breakdown was outstanding on that. So, you know, my own personal feelings on the thing is that sometimes mistakes can be made, and sometimes, you know, the semantics of what a development team says are pretty much every time a development team says something, it's taken as gospel. So when something has to be retracted, there inevitably ends up being, you know, pitchforks and riots and stuff. And it's whatever.
Yeah. I think, and again, thanks for the plug there, Cash, but on the show, I go through a lot of the metrics and a lot of the facts behind where this problem originated and where we are today. But just to kind of recap the theme, there is a dichotomy that is currently taking place where there's a balance between the experience that a gamer has. Think about the individual gamer. In this current moment, an individual gamer is lost. they're alone. If you're not inside of a hamlet, you're alone. You're in this forest, you're killing wolves, bears, elk, and you really do feel like you're alone. But if you go into a hamlet, all right, it's populous. You have a lot of people. There is this master equation that's going on, and I'm just going to say 2,000 because nothing has ever been said other than a server cap of 2,000, right? But if we are to pretend like that magic number is 2,000, you've got to keep that one experience while at the same time recognizing that almost double the amount of available slots showed up on day one. Right. And again, I'm summarizing my entire podcast. 354,000 available slots to play the game on day one. And there were over 700,000 gamers. So you have this ultimate dichotomy of a gaming experience versus the community. And they're almost inversely related. They're in conflict. Right. So there's a little bit of me that. And I think you can hear my angst in my podcast. I think you can hear it. But there's a little bit of a war that's happening right now with the development team and the community managers of what is the right balance. And we as gamers are kind of stuck in the middle. What I will say is we're still within 3 weeks. We're less than a month of this game being launched. I guarantee you they are at like a Sev1 fire drill trying to figure this out, right? And again, we're less than a month in. But just to throw numbers at the problem, it's not as though they have just let this fester. They have doubled, more than doubled. They started on day one with 177 servers. They're not 485. So they're not being complacent. They're not being negligent. We are just, I say we, New World is just trying to find that balance of not sacrificing a gamer's experience for the sake of this community experience.
If I may, I think what my point on this is they're doing something. They're not ignoring it. They're not acknowledging it. They try to come out with some good input. They try to give you the best possible solution to a problem that they weren't prepared for, and that's, they did not expect it, I don't think, and that's okay. But the big thing of it is the communication, the transparency. I'm a WoW player. How many times have you sat there and stared at your computer waiting for somebody to acknowledge it from the company, and nobody does? This game and this gaming company, they actually acknowledge the problems. They call it a, hey, look, we made a mistake here. Hey, we weren't ready. Hey, this happened. Thank you for your patience. Here's the information. Here's what we're trying to do. And they pivoted on the servers because maybe they didn't realize they couldn't transfer in the same zone. We don't know the complete technical issues with it. Maybe that's the case. Maybe it's not. But at least they're giving us a bone. And that's with me. I like communication. I work at a big company. And if the communication breaks, the company stops. And I think it's just nice and refreshing to have that be presented. It still sucks for some people. Not going to say it doesn't. If you were waiting to get on a server and you made a character, now you got to decide, do I re-roll a new character and start over? What do I do? I know that sucks, but I'm just happy that they're giving us information. They're giving us the things that they are doing and what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
So, I got a positive and a negative. It's just... perhaps just food for thought, but wouldn't you think, this is the negative first, wouldn't you think that a company as big as Amazon, who knows Stratix, they know numbers, there's no way they don't, wouldn't you think that they would have known beforehand, based on the sales, how many people they potentially had coming in on day one?
That's true.
I mean, food for thought. I mean, it's. What are your thoughts?
You're not
maybe
wrong.
The infancy of their company with gaming.
Man, you're not wrong. Yeah.
So what I think honestly happened, and we saw it because within 2 or 3 hours of the problem surfacing, they already had new servers. They were putting 20 additional servers in each mega server. So we already saw that that was a trigger they were ready to pull. I think they had thresholds. I think they purposefully launched the game below their threshold. And as the population hit certain thresholds, they pulled those triggers to react to it. Because again, what is the inverse? What is the opposite side of this coin? You launch with 485 servers and no one has anybody to play with because they're all spread to the four winds.
Right.
So I think they gated it on purpose, but I also think that's part of the problem as well. They gated it probably too much. And now they're having to kind of, you know, pull back a little bit. And that, I believe, is where that kind of contention is really coming from.
And I understand. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go.
I understand that. Like, from a gamer standpoint perspective, you know, you're frustrated. You thought you were going to be able to do X, Y, Z. So, you know, you went over here anticipating the transfer over. I get that. 100%, especially if you have friends on other server, etc. I'm with you. I understand. On the flip side of the coin, it was already stated, but it does put you in this position. It's like, okay, do I transfer now and just eat it? Because you're going to have to eat it. That's the harsh reality. You're going to have to eat it because for whatever reason, whether it's maybe, you know, some of the guys have already said that either they thought this was going to be something they'd be able to do, and maybe because of the large populace that came over, this was something that somehow got pushed or moved or change happened, something took place, I don't know. Or maybe that tweet was put out before all communication was given, I don't know. You know, we definitely don't have the definitive answer, and there's a whole lot of different answers that could be given, honestly, that could be the one thing. But overall, it's tough as a gamer. I get it. My wife, who started playing the game, she was on a different server. She couldn't transfer over. So yeah, so she had to eat it and just start over. And granted, she was level 9. She wasn't like super invested yet. And again, I get that. Oh, she was only level 9. I'm 47 and blah, blah, blah. I get it. But at the same token, gaming is... I kind of go back to an old adage that we have. This isn't going to make it feel any better. This isn't going to take the pain away or the aggravation away. But it's simple as this. Gaming is better with friends. And it puts you in this place where it's like, if you're going to play with your friends, and that's what you got to do. You got to eat it and just do it. It's going to suck. It's like ripping off a Band-Aid. It's going to hurt either way.
One of the things that I want to bring up is they gave us warning signs. They actually put all of the streamers and their groups on a website and said, hey, this is where all the streamers are going. If you joined El Dorado and you knew, or Olympus, we tried to go on El Dorado, right? But they gave us analytics to show us where all the streamers were at. So you kind of knew where the big lumps were going to be. And when we went in, when I got out of that 18,000 queue, there were several servers that had low population with no weights. So if you're angry about the game not giving you the ability to get on El Dorado, that's a decision that you made to go to El Dorado. But there was room for you to play on other servers, because I immediately rolled on the server we're on and I played from the beginning to the end. No problems, no queues, nothing. Well, there were a few queues at the early on, but my point being, Amazon can't do, if they are going to do a 2,000 server cut so they can make sure that the player performance is there and you can get in the game and play, they can't make a server fill 25,000 people from the very beginning day. That's not possible. The game would have crashed. They would have not been able to play. Nobody would have been able to get on the beach. We'd all been fighting over that one boar. And so they gave you the opportunity to decide on where to go before you got in that 18,000 queue and you sat there and got mad, when all I had to do was back out and go to another server. And we had to move an entire community in like, we sat there for an hour trying to figure out what we're going to do, and then we moved.
Dude, Solus, how many characters did you make?
4.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. All to level 10.
But my ending point on that is you can't blame Amazon for your planning on wanting to be on a huge server where all the people are. That's not something they can be held accountable for. You had a place to go and a place to play. We made that decision and we've been playing since day one. Am I wrong?
No, definitely.
Sometimes you gotta change your plans.
Now, it wasn't I don't think it was Amazon that let that information out there. I think that that was a fan that put that stuff together, because we got our Lore
they
Seekers
supported
cast,
it though.
We got hit up on Twitter or on Twitch with a private message about where we were going, and then lo and behold, we ended up on that website.
Oh,
about where we were going. That's how that whole thing ended up going down. So somebody, I mean, whoever did that work, like, wow, that's a lot of work, but but that's how that website ended up getting populated. So I wanted to end this with something positive. Because however it ended up shaking down, I'm very happy about the fact that they stuck to their guns and did not overpopulate these servers, because,
oh yeah.
Yeah, the experience they held at the very top of the pedestal, they held player experience at the very top. And yep. I think that was the smartest play, because when you have a bunch of gamers trying to get in, now all of a sudden the queues get shorter because they're overpopulating the servers, and now you're allowed to get in, and now you have umpteen amount of players on the beach fighting over, you know, fighting for that same boar, for that same node. Now you've ruined the player experience, and you may or may not retain some of those players. So a lot of those players are going to get frustrated and go, I'm out. Like, I'm not doing this. This is the questing system sucks. And well, no, it's not the questing system. There's just too many dang people.
We've seen that right there more than anything.
Right.
I mean, that's if you've played MMOs, that's been a thing over and over and over.
And they seemingly knew that. They seemingly had their finger on the pulse of how these launches are supposed to go. So very, very good move for, in the first place, for holding true to the player experience. The second thing is they had a contingency plan. And I would say that is where we had to figure it out very quickly, because we did not have a contingency plan. There's probably a whole bunch of companies out there that didn't have a contingency plan, but I have to hand it to AGS for at least having a contingency plan to where they probably had a trigger. And as soon as they reached that number, they said, okay, first batch of extra servers, release these now. Second batch of extra servers, release these now. And once that happened, and once people decided, okay, I'm not going to sit in an 18,000 person queue, that's when we were forced to come up with a contingency plan, which we did, and we ended up switching over to Tlapalan TT.
What?
Up to top tier server.
There it is.
And we've had no problems at all. And I was actually, I think I told you guys this the other night, but I had a queue last night. I had a one-person queue, and it was gone immediately. But it kind of made me happy to know that, you know what? We did land on a good server as a backup plan for us, because there's still a ton of people on our server here 3 weeks in.
Yeah.
And it'd be interesting to see how it is at a month and a half and at 3 months, but I'm still very, very pleased at how everything shook down. They very quickly shifted and allowed everybody to be able to play the game. You might not have been on the server that you wanted to be on, but everybody had the opportunity to play on day one if you wanted to play.
Yeah, from a server quality standpoint, this was bar none the best launch I've ever seen from an MMO. Everything you just said, you know, not a million, you know, champ, not a million people fighting over one mob. You know, server integrity as far as holding up, lag spikes, very, you know, not really a thing at all for me. It wasn't.
Well, like Edge said, you know, he was talking about how I like how they didn't open 500 servers. Well, think about World of Warcraft. The reason why you had LFR and LFG is because there were so many dead servers. They had to take those in bundles, and then they gave you the ability to reach out to those people, right? Because they weren't going to force you to leave your server. I do not want to go to LFR LFGs. Mm. I don't want to do that. I would rather have the small community servers that we have, because that's when Lich King was the best of WoW, in my opinion. And it was because it was based around community. They had community management. They had community people on the servers. You know, it was a small community, right? And I just did not like how those servers started to die, and then they just crammed them all up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. You're right.
I've got a current reaction and a future kind of optimistic reaction. So here we go. So currently, I think So Amazon has their work cut out for them with the current state. Like, how do you fix or how do you address what is currently going on? Roger. What I start kind of thinking through is we're talking about this from a perspective of us gaming since game one. Imagine a guild from World of Warcraft or a guild from Elder Scrolls Online of 100 individuals that are like, hey, let's go try out New World. Do you think they 100 people could find a new home in New World, given the caps and the restrictions? So I think there's also kind of a current state moving forward. How do we address these server caps for incoming new players? But I also want to propose that as we grow the map, as we start building DLCs, and that those starter zones become kind of more irrelevant, I think that will inevitably grow the amount of people that we can have playing at any given time. And I do think that will alleviate some of that problem. So I think there's also some future kind of outlook to this as well, as we are less than a month into this game. And as we start bringing in more different content, I think that will also help solve some of this problem.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. That's good perspective, particularly for a future setting, you know. This map's going to get huge.
Huge. Oh yeah. Now, here's something that this is crazy. This is just a throw at the wall. Do you think it would have been as chaotic and crazy and stressful had they not released the servers, the names of the servers, a few days earlier?
I think it would have delayed the inevitable. Once people would have found out where they were going to go, or you know, XYZ was going to go, X streamer, whatever, it would have happened regardless. It would have just taken longer to happen.
It's just like that website we're talking about. I didn't realize that it was an Amazon thing, but it was still there and everybody saw it. It was tweeted everywhere. My point is everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face. Mike Tyson said it best. And an 18,000 Q is a severe right hook to the face.
That's a kick in the nuts, dude.
If you want to stand in line for that, you stand in line for it. But God, all means, if there's four servers open on this in the same thing and you could go play right now and you just wanted to be on that server because your favorite streamer's on there, that's really not Amazon's problem. That is a decision that a person made. And everybody should understand that there's only so many servers. There's only so many people on that server. So you've got to have some legitimacy to this. We have to be adults and think about it like an adult, right? It is one of those things where when you realize you're not going to be able to do something you want, you either stand there and wait for it or you go find something else to do, right? Yeah. And that's what it came down to. And they opened more servers. They gave you the ability to play. You just wanted to play on the server you wanted to play on. And I get that, but you kind of couldn't.
And I know we've talked about it before, but that just real quick, how this whole thing went down with us is it was myself and Champ and Sullis we're sitting in a Discord channel going, what are we going to do? Because we're all sitting in queues. It was nasty. I had an inkling for about 15, 20 minutes that I'm not gonna be able to play this game today. Like there's no way I'm going to be able to get through this 18,000 person queue when it's just barely ticking along. And I remember saying, I really wish Amazon would say something. And it was almost as if it was happening. They were like tweeting simultaneously because they announced something was happening. And it worked out great. And then Champ just said, hey, look, let's just pick a server so everybody can play the game and we'll figure the rest out later. And that is exactly what we did. And we never looked back. I mean, we're still on TT. We're going to stay there.
Yeah.
Maybe next time we could, you know, we could pick less of a tongue twister of a server name. But I think for the most part, you know, our company's pretty happy. We're ecstatic about the way it shook down. And it was because they had that contingency plan in place with trigger points and they released when they needed to release those extra servers and things ended up working out just fine.
Yeah, you know, TT started rough, you know, like it started rough. The faction, the Syndicate faction, I'm just going to come out and say it. That was the worst representation I've seen of a Syndicate faction in closed and open beta. But something happened. I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
But these people, I don't know if the toxic people left. or what, but things have kind of started to level out. Oh, yeah, they're always going to be there, but it wasn't
there.
No, it was like a full-on nasty Reddit post 24/7 on the Syndicate side on Tilapia, whatever it is. You know, like, it was ridiculous, and we were losing because of it as a faction, 100%. You know, just looking at the map, like, we were suffering big time. And you had a guild crank up their trading tax to 25%, so there was a huge blow-up over that. I mean, it was just one thing after the other, and now it's settled down. It's a good server. I gotta say, pretty good.
Right, I'm having a good time, and we're not even into it yet. You know, we're allowing our players to level and experience the leveling of the game. Because Sullis, we talked about it. Came up to us, hey, when are we gonna take over a city? Well, if we take over a city, we're gonna have to stay there. So, do you want to take over the city? And we polled it, and our community spoke. We want to level. We want to experience the game. So we haven't even begun to kick ass yet. You haven't seen the 100 of us running around in a zone yet, taking over your crap. It's coming.
It's coming.
We're giving you time to get comfortable and get your building nice and pretty for me to take over. Go ahead and get them pictures up on the wall. Put that nice fur blanket down on the bed, because that's going to be my bed here in about 2-3 weeks.
That's right.
So just understand, don't think for a second because we're taking our time doesn't mean we ain't got teeth, because these claws are sharp and we're coming for your stuff.
Our time. We're going to come read all your books.
Yeah.
All of them.
Yeah. I just want to react to Cash's question real quick. First off, it's a phenomenal question. I think this is where, like, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. Right? Like, I think New World had the best intentions. They had community in mind. And they said, how do we equip these communities to be ready to go minute zero? So, okay, here are your 56 servers in the NA West. Make your plans, community. If you remember their tweet, they framed it exactly that way. Hey, make your plans with your friends, right? Here are your 56 servers, make it happen. Well, damned if you do, damned if you don't, right? We saw the negative, you know, come out of that. So I think it's a phenomenal question is, you know, next time this happens, next expansion or next, you know, launch of a game, like, what is the right answer? Because you want to be able to plan. At the same time, you're also showing your hand, right? You're letting everybody kind of commit to an El Dorado that has 21,000 people in server, right? So I think what you ask is a very deep question of how you approach that. But I do think they had the best intentions of just educating communities on how to get involved together at minute zero.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, friends, you can check this out for yourself if you want to read the forum post. We're going to start linking all our sources over at the episode page so you can see us for yourself. So the server transfer issues that took place and the posts that followed. Let us know what you think of the servers. Email us, loreseekerscast@gmail.com. Now, gentlemen, we stepped foot into Starstone Barrows
over the last 48 hours. And I'll be honest with you, Brick, that was pretty fun.
So good.
Why does he have a hand grenade?
I stabbed a guy.
Yeah. I was meaning to talk to you about that. You might want to lay low, maybe put on a dress, live with your aunt. I don't know.
The authorities are definitely looking for you.
Oh, gentlemen, that was fun. Yeah. You know, step his foot in that. That was the second expedition. We've kind of made this pack where we do the first one together as content creators. We bring Pip along with us, OG best friend from years and years ago. And then we film it. And, you know, I know it's already been made mention earlier, but yeah, that is absolutely on social media now. Or not social media, I'm sorry.
YouTube. It starts with a Y and ends with a U-tube.
I had to think for a minute, Dad. But anyway, so yeah, it's pretty cool.
It's very cool. Yeah, it was sentimental for me because this was the first expedition that I've never seen. I've ran through Amreen a few times in the betas, and so like it was awesome to go through it with these gentlemen for the first time a couple weeks ago. But this one was brand new to me too. So the sights, the sounds, the experience, it was 100% blind for all four of us, and we have some funny. Outtakes and shorts that I'm sure are going to come out of this, but it was probably the most like fun hour in 10 minutes that I've had. in this game. It was incredible.
Yeah, I'm super super excited about the future of the PvE content, and I'm very impressed with the shift that they made from a game that started off as a, you know, PvE kind of or PvP kind of slash survival game. The work that they have put in over the last year into making PvE relevant for the players that love PvE, myself included. And having gone through Amrine for the first time, where I was incredibly I'm impressed by the simplicity of these expeditions and the complexity mixed.
Yeah.
Because they're big to give you that epic scale.
Right.
They're challenging enough to give you a good challenge. Like, you truly need to pay attention in this game. And as a healer wearing tissue paper,
currently off-brand tissue paper, judging by what you're wearing in this video.
Yeah, yeah. Like, if you were to buy the shittiest toilet paper, there's always, and it can say 2-ply. You guys, it can have the 2-ply stat on it, but there's always a danger of breach at the absolute worst time, right? Which inevitably turns into a shower. So when you're throwing healy feelies and you're wearing toilet paper, you need to be paying freaking attention. Like, absolutely. And I got smacked a couple of times in Starstone, and I love that. I love the fact that if you drop your attention for a second, especially on these runs where we're going in blind, like, we're not looking up any mechanics or anything, we're just going in and just enjoying these and absorbing them for the first time and figuring it out together, I think that these excavation or these expeditions are knocking it out of the park. Like, I cannot wait for the future of this. They're gorgeous, they're engaging, they're big, and there's some puzzle to it, and I'm just really, really very much enjoying them.
Jeffy in chat refers to your cloth, your toilet paper as battle pajamas. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's a battle sometimes. It's a struggle.
Yeah.
I think with regards to the expeditions, from my perspective, is I like how the first expedition and the second are completely different.
Yes. Oh, good.
Okay,
point.
So in the first expedition, it's a straight linear style, right? Like, you've got the one offshoot where you can pick up the materials and stuff if you're willing to look around, right? And you've got all the other options that you can go look, but it's pretty straight online, and it was pretty normal for a dungeon. The next one, completely different. Like, laser beams, bro. Spoilers, laser beams. Yeah. And we tested them, and they work.
Oh, yeah, they're one-shotters.
Didn't feel good. And
nope.
The last boss, that fight, as we were figuring it out, right? As we were starting to understand, okay, you got to dodge here. I think it was Sullis went, you can dodge through that. I love how we are at the same time trying to fight, but we're also paying attention enough to where we're calling things out. And it was a good time. And the dungeon was still challenging, even though I out-leveled the dungeon. I know I did, because, you know, I was at 40, I think, at the time. But I still died. We wiped because we weren't paying attention to the mechanics, and we got Rickrolled. And it just happens. You know what I'm saying? But I loved the way that those two were completely different. One was like the trainer, and the other one was like, oh, by the way, we got lasers.
Right.
Dr. Evil sitting back here with his
I think you're on to something there, champ. Honestly, like, I'm trying to think of the expedition, or here we go, the dungeons from Elder Scrolls Online, the dungeons from World of Warcraft. It took a very long time before they introduced like mazes and puzzles. This is expedition number 2, and we were trying to figure out how to get through the damn room, right? Like, how to crawl under lasers. We had to jump around, climb cliff faces. Yeah, exactly. On expedition number 2, this is early, y'all. This is early in the game. Super interested to find out like what's in store for us. If this is this early at level 35, that the gate is 35 here. Imagine what the expeditions are like at level 60 and beyond.
I like that, though.
It's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. You're 100% right. I like that. I like that we see this variance already, because gamers nowadays, MMO players today are on a different skill set than MMO players were in 2004. You know? Like, the level of gamer is drastically risen since then.
Oh, yeah.
And I think we see that, them willing to challenge that within the second expedition. I mean, ultimately, we wiped once. We're able to make it through with, for the most part, no issue. Aside, you know, there was some boss fights, absolutely, that definitely kind of tangled us up a little bit. And, if you go watch that video, you'll see it as well, too. But it was a beautiful dungeon, figuring out the mechanics, the puzzles. It was refreshing to see something like that so early on. Absolutely, 100%, totally agree.
Question from Rob's in chat. Will these dungeons have a hard/veteran/mythic mode, you think? And yes, that is in the plans. I have heard that before, that there is going to be some difficulty scaling coming in later patches.
Like,
yeah. So and I mean, like, for the entry level of these dungeons, it was challenging, and I did enjoy that, and I do think I think all of us were a little over what we needed to be for this particular one, and it still presented a really good challenge. Now, one of the things that I did notice is it was a good mix between figuring out the fights, which is pretty standard in a lot of MMOs, the puzzles, mm-hmm. which we had to put our heads together and figure out. Now, you know, first or second time you go through, you get it figured out, and then you got it right. Now, you know, all the additional runs, you're going to understand how to do it. But it's the magic of that first time. The other thing that they added in was the jumping stuff.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, and that really took me back to Holocron hunting in SWTOR. Because do you remember that, where you had to make like all those, you know, daring jumps and make it up to the top of this certain thing? And World of Warcraft had some of that. Elder Scrolls Online had a little bit of that. But like this one, yeah, even for small little parts of this expedition, you had to make a jump, and with the added benefit of being able to save yourself, if you kind of miss a little bit but you're close enough to the wall, your character can save himself. So it adds realism,
yeah,
and immersion in when you can do that, as opposed to just, you know, you jump off and you're holding your staff and you just you're falling down. Like, if you're really falling, like, you're going to be reaching for something to save your butt,
right?
And you could do that in this game.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's glorious to be able to do that. I would love to see them implement secret rooms into some of these in some additional way that you have to figure it out. Maybe it's a quest line that helps you figure it out. Maybe you get a tip from an NPC that, hey, make sure you check when you're in this room, make sure you check here.
Yeah. I would almost
How
like
How cool
for
would
them,
that be?
Oh, that'd be amazing. And I would almost like to see just something implemented that's never spoken of, never said, and then one day someone finds it.
Yeah.
Have you seen those articles, news articles from, like, they're very, very rare. Especially over at, like, at PCGamer.com. Like, there'll be, like, so-and-so developer says secret still has not been found 10 years later.
Oh, yeah. Oh my gosh.
You know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm thinking. Like, that would just be, I hope it wouldn't take us that long, but that'd be cool to see.
There is a entire website dedicated to WoW secrets. Like, it legit, every secret in the game that's been found.
I love
and
that
then
site
developers, yeah. And developers go on there and go, you haven't found something yet. You know what I mean? Like, they just poke them.
Yeah.
And in this game, what would be great is, what if you had to go out into the world and, like, Katie is right here with me. What if it's lore pages? What if you had to go find specific lore pages, and you had to have those lore pages in your journal, right? And then when you get up to it, you kind of had to figure it out. I don't mind that kind of stuff because it's different. Yes, I understand on the 50th run, you're probably not going to want to do it, but if you're not really quick at it at that point, maybe.
That's it. Yeah.
But how great would that be? And then when you open that door, you go into it, and then you've got a trial, and then you got to defeat a boss, and they give you an extra chest or maybe that's how you turn hard mode on, right? And then it opens up an entire new wing to the expedition and turns it in from a 20-minute run now to an hour-long run, because now you have four raid-style bosses for a five-man group to deal with, right? With higher damage, higher mobility, so it challenges that higher level of player. But you do it in an immersive way to where it seems like you're discovering this, right? Because the one thing I love about our runs, this is the first time we did that as a group. Right. And you only get that one time.
Yeah. Right.
And it's super important to take it all in. If you ran through it really quick and didn't notice some of the statues, shame on you. If you didn't see some of the views looking up, shame on you, man. You missed out, because they did a wonderful job of making the dungeon seem very constricted and huge at the same time.
Right.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Yeah. Good
point. I love the thought about integrating the lore pages into that somehow.
Yeah.
Some type of a system, like a cryptic system, where you would have to discover all these lore pages out in the world in regards to that expedition, and somewhere hidden in there, there's a hidden message that you would have to figure out, and it would give you like a clue to an additional area where you would get to go and discover more of the overall story while you're in there.
Yeah.
I'm nerding out. I promised myself I wouldn't nerd boner on this episode.
But it's an odd thing to promise. I mean, you would go out of your way to promise that to yourself, or just...
Yeah, I have internal dialogue. I'm sorry. Do you not? Is that not normal?
Not about nerd boners.
It takes up a big part of my day, bro. I'm sorry.
My dog jumped up when you said nerd boner and looked at me like, what did he just say?
Oscon Plotz!
Remember, okay, so the way that we bring members in, we offer them a puzzle. They don't have to decipher it. It's cool when they do. We've had how many Solus actually figure that out?
5 out of 164. Okay. We've had 5.
5 people. Yeah. I would love to see that. Symbols strewn, spread out through different lore pages that, really make it a big deal. Really make it mysterious. Bring it together, like that. Oh, man. Man, oh, man, oh, man.
Yeah, and you can even incentivize it too. Like you could put maybe not like a best in slot gear, but like a really good really good piece of gear or equipment or weapon, or maybe like a rare ingredient. But like, hey, here's the path or the hints on how to get to it. And so you're in this expedition, you're having to go through these, gates in order to find this item. You can even incentivize it. But I love where y'all are at with this. I think y'all are onto something.
Yeah. Well, anyway, this was a fun expedition. I think overall, I'm looking forward to the next one. I don't even know the name of the third one. I've kind of kept ignorant on some of this until the time comes. So, does anyone know?
I think it's like I think it's Nerd Boner Hamlet or something.
Oh,
like that
makes sense. Is it like is there a vet hard mode?
Oh!
Do they hand out little blue pills at the beginning? I'm asking for a friend.
Jibs,
asking for a friend.
Jibs, that's 2 minutes in the penalty box for Jibs. This is a family show, sir.
We're gonna probably need to edit that out.
Oh no, you don't.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. All right. Anyway. They're a thing in ESO, just to be clear. All right, so anyway. Oh, Starstone Barrows was a good time.
And that's the moment where everything got derailed, right there. Right there.
Oh, man.
Next time on Lore Seekers.
I'm sorry. All right, so anyway, patch notes for 1.0.2. They're a thing. To sum this up, there was a lot of issues that were fixed. One, did anyone notice the over-encumbered truffle shuffle all the way back to town everyone's doing?
Oh, yeah. I had that quite a bit.
The twitch.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that thing's gone now.
Dang it.
You can still
know what else is gone?
Encumbered.
You want to know what else is gone?
What else?
The gold in my treasure chest when I fish.
Oh, let's talk about it.
Uh-oh.
Let's talk. You gonna put the hat on? What?
All I'm saying is that wasn't in your patch notes, Amazon.
So talk, what is this? Reference?
So basically, so you get a treasure chest from fishing. And there are casual players, i.e. K-Champ, who fishes more than she does anything else. And they remove the gold from these cases. Pip the same way. And there's nothing in the patch notes. I've looked all over them. So here's my question. Is it not supposed to be that way? Did somebody change something and it's not supposed to be? I need answers. Because I want my damn gold back.
It is a good way to make gold. Now was that, maybe that ties into the AFKers, AFK fishing, or the macro fishing, or the or gold farmers?
I think perhaps. The macro fishing was them fishing for XP, right? So because it's just a macro, right, that casts and pulls and casts and pulls. And by the way, I kind of don't want them to fix that, because I've killed a lot of people with enemies when they do that. And it's almost like a game inside of the game to drag that wolf and then stand perfectly on the other side of that person as they get hit and then watch them die. It's kind of comical. Right. And I'm going to be sad when that's not a thing.
Hmm. Yeah. So I'm wondering if, I mean, I don't know if that, maybe removing that was either a mistake. Maybe it shouldn't have been removed, or B, it is maybe part of balancing the economy somehow, but there's already not a lot of ways in the game to make gold besides playing the trade game, right? So when you remove a lot of the ways in the game as you're just PvEing with your character, I think you're lessening the chances for when there's, okay, you know what I mean? Like, there's already not a lot of options out there to make gold other than trading with other players.
Right. And the thing with that is you get them so few, right? That's the thing I was trying to say. It's,
yes,
so few.
I'll tell you the one thing I did notice though today. The patch happened today. I played for the day and I did notice a lot more gold making happening as I was questing. A lot. I made a lot more gold today. And I thought I was selling a bunch of stuff, and I wasn't. It was just what I was getting as rewards and such.
Interesting.
So, and I'm going to have to pay closer attention to where that is coming from, but I did notice an increase of income today quite a bit. So I know that they did increase the amount of loot in the lootable boxes and chests and such that are around the world. So I wonder if they're in those.
Yeah, that's huge.
Well, yeah.
For those of us who want to own a house, a lot of us were looking at that 5,000, 10,000 gold gate that's there. And we're like, we're never going to own a house. It's going to be months before I can own a house. So whatever they did to fix that, hey, cool. Like, I think there's a lot of people wanting to experience that piece of this game that now can. Again, great call, Cash, but like, where's it coming from? No idea. But I'm glad they did something to address it, because, yeah, people can actually get into that piece of the game.
Well, to address too with gold making, I don't play I don't play the trader game either. But I have 16K gold. And how I have 16K gold is I kill a lot of things. And every time you kill some, I get 6 gold off of them. It don't sound like a lot, but I got 16K in the bank. And I earned that all on my own. Now, I did sell stuff to orders, because there's buy orders. If you go to the auction house, per se, in each town, some of them have buy orders. And if you walk up, it might not look like it's a lot, but it still fills your pockets. And I don't want to play the auction house, much like Brian. I don't want to play the auction house. That's not my thing. I want to kill things and find new gear, but that gives me the option to not have to. And I just sell it to buy orders and I make pennies on the dollar, but I'm still making money and I'm rolling 16K right now. So breaking your equipment down gives you gold, and killing mobs gives you gold.
The treasure chest used to give you gold.
Treasure chest, right?
Right, right. That's what
just
I'm talking about.
Just the fishing
treasure chest. But my point is I agree. You know, adjusting that I feel like they did, because I made 2K today and I don't know how I did it.
Hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't even have a clue. I just killed stuff and now I have more gold. But I think they're addressing it, and I agree it needs to be balanced to where people who don't want to play the auction house can still make the money to buy a house, right? They should be able to do that.
Yeah. Well, and even beyond owning the house, I mean, it's 100,000 gold to own a territory. Mm-hmm. So now we're talking about in-game territory control. So gold's important. How do you get to it? I mean, that's great. I'm glad they're addressing that. So awesome points.
This is theory in chat says, so what happens when you run out of quests?
Yeah, I agree. I don't have an answer. I'm saying right now I'm making gold, but I agree. They need to make sure that they look at the economy and make sure that the people who don't play auction house, you know, online is still able to make money enough to do that. And so that comes with what? Questing. It comes with dailies. It comes with the syndicate quests. Maybe they need to add more gold to those. Hmm. Maybe they need to add more gold to the quest on the board. So people who like to go out and do things and not just sit at the auction house can make enough money to suffice what they need, because 100,000 gold is a lot to make.
So question for the three of you, because I've only played World of Warcraft and Elder Scrolls Online. Y'all three have a lot more experience than I do with other games. Is that unique to New World, or is that pretty typical? Once you're done with questing and you're done with the main story quest, what other methods have there been to make gold in MMOs?
Free
farming. Yeah,
farming.
Because you can sell to vendors.
Yeah.
In this game, you can't sell things to vendors to make gold. Mm. So and it's fine. Like I don't mind that feature in the game. If some people call it a feature, some people probably call it something else. But I haven't minded that at all. I don't mind breaking down my stuff and getting repair parts for it. Like that's totally fine. I think too with probably what Amazon is thinking is that when you run out of quests, if you get all the quests done in the game. First off, outstanding work. That's a lot of lore seeking. Like, in hopefully you're not space barring through everything and you're actually absorbing all of the amazing quest hacks, because every time you space bar through quest hacks, a developer loses their wings. Yes, I just resurrected that. But perhaps Amazon is thinking that if you finish with one aspect of the game, then there are other ways to make gold, i.e. the trading post, i.e. killing mobs, you know, kind of grinding out. If you want more money, though, there are other options for you in the game while we make more quests. Because this first set of quests that we have in the game, this is not it, folks. Like, as expansions come out, as more content is developed and released, it's going to add lots more quests into the game. And this, them taking away a little bit of gold from here and putting more gold in this aspect of the game for you to get, this is all the balance that developers, this is the tightrope of balancing a game that developers have to walk upon launch. Because you can have a policy and a plan for everything until you get into the crap. And now you're in the crap and you're watching everything happen. You're watching these economies evolve around player behaviors. Then you can adjust as you need to.
One of the things I have an issue with is when you get your repair parts full, you get no more gold from the gear you break down. That needs to be addressed. And I think they should give us the ability to sell gold or sell our gear that we're not going to use for a percentage. Because when you get too many repair parts, you get nothing. It literally just red text you. You don't get repair parts. You don't get gold. You get nothing. That needs to be fixed, because breaking down gear gives you gold. They have things worked in there, I think. I just think they need to be tweaked. Just a little bit more gold for the gear you break down and give us the ability to still get gold, even though we can't get the breakdown parts, because that frustrates me. I go out and start getting beat on so I can repair my stuff so I can get gold for that gear, right? So I agree with you. I think they've got a really good way of viewing it. I just think they're gonna have to tweak it, right? And that's just every game. Right. Every game has to be tweaked. And so I agree with you. Maybe giving us the ability to sell the gear instead of breaking it down when we are full of repair parts, right? Instead of that.
Right. Yeah. And just a real quick point. Take note. Let's take a step back and take note of the things that we're addressing and talking about right now. We're 3 weeks in.
Yeah.
These are minor issues. These are minor tweaks here and there. We're not talking about server lag. We're not talking about game crashes. We're not talking about unbalanced PvP, unbalanced PvE. All of that stuff is in place, and it's running like a freaking well-oiled machine.
That's something right under our noses. Skipped over.
It does, because we're gamers. We're always looking to, you can improve it this way, you can improve it that way. But look at the foundation that they built. We're 3 weeks in, and we're discussing how the economy can get better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's pretty cool, you guys. It's pretty freaking cool.
Absolutely. And speaking of changes, so one of the things that they, you know, yes to what you said, Champ, but also this was a big issue regarding wars. And so they changed around faction missions, all right? Quote, and by the way, this is taken exactly from the New World Update article that you can, we'll have linked over the episode page. So faction missions, quote, we adjusted the rates of influence gain over time so that it will continue to require significant effort over time to flip a territory into conflict state. Reduced, all right, so this is number one, reduce the amount of influence increase over time significantly for attacking factions. This is to account for a bug we found where the increase was multiplied much faster than intended over time. Also, number two, remove the decrease in influence over time for defending factions. So in other words, there was too much back and forth happening. You were seeing a very, very quick influence increase across, let's say an opposing faction was trying to take over this area. You were seeing a very quick increase on the influence. So now what this will do on both sides of the spectrum is it's going to slow everything down. It's going to take more for you to put that place, that territory in a conflict state, and vice versa for those defending for it. So at the end of the day, what this does in the long run is this is going to make war even more meaningful. And it's not going to be such a common, I would say it's probably going to be, it's still going to be common, but it's going to be less than what it has been, because it feels like lately it's been rapid fire.
Right.
And as a company keeping up with that, watching companies keep up with that, I know that's been a all hands on deck all the time kind of thing. In fact, I saw someone say at one point, it's like, you can't keep up with this.
And I think right now, a lot of people, they're leveling. They're just going to the different zones based on their level and where their story's at. And they're not thinking too much about crafting in a certain zone. You know, even if it's a different faction that owns that zone, they're not thinking so much about like where they're crafting, where they're gathering, but all of that counts. And like, as you craft and as you gather, that's contributing to the people that own that territory.
Right.
People really aren't thinking too much about that right now, I think, unless you're PvPing and really watching that map. Later, as more people get to level cap and, you know, start capping out all their stuff, they're going to start picking and choosing the zones to go to so that they're contributing to their own faction. Think that's going to start taking place more. And if it's not, then it's going to be up to us as players to start funneling people from our own faction into those areas to make those territories more secure for our own factions. Otherwise, you're spinning your wheels. You're working against your own faction.
Right. Yeah, and I think this is part of the equation, the end game equation, that will constantly be something that they tweak. Like, they're never going to get the equation right. And I kind of equate it to Hunger Games. Please bear with me, but I feel like there's like a game warden who's sitting back there with like a dial. And they're like, all right, let's kind of slow this down a little bit. Like, maybe in between seasons, maybe like in the middle of a couple weeks or within a month, like slow it down. Take away some of the impact that every single influence has in a territory. But if you want to see a quick turnover, maybe it's their version of wiping, quote unquote, a map, maybe they turn that up where that influence is now significantly higher. Like, I do see that being a controlled variable that they can impact the overall game. Again, I don't think they're ever going to nail the perfect equation, and that might be by design. Maybe I'm thinking about this wrong, but that could be by design.
I don't know. There's a part of me that thinks Well, I almost said the thinks that they will, but then my first thought was, well, think about the players. Each server is going to be different. Each cadence, each server is going to be different. You know, there's servers out there that are just full on PvP. It's where all the big PvP guilds are. They were talking about it pre-launch. I'm talking big, big, big guilds from other games, and they've pulled into this one server. You know, so when I think of stuff like that, I think of, oh, okay, that may be different there versus Tilapia or whatever you call it, TT. And, yeah. You know, so I think it's going to be different per server. I really do. But I think this provides a overall baseline where there will be some relatability, you know, in regard to these changes or the cadence that wars are fought. But.
Agreed.
Anywho. So they also changed a couple of other things around. Number two? Yeah, they nerfed a couple boar and bear farming spots. Apparently, boar were spawning in an increased number. Apparently, there's a place called Boar Island. I didn't know about this. But anyway, you go there, and there were way too many boars. So whoever was there, congrats, you got a lot of bacon. but anyway, they made that change. They made several other, and honestly, it was mostly fixes. And I think that's what they're working on right now. And I'm glad for it. You know, these fixes, these bug issues, they're really, really focusing hard on that. On top of that, handling the server integrity as well. So props to them on top of that. So before we get to our lore lesson, there was something that just felt like we need to cover. Because sometimes gamers can just be gamers. Which can be good, but can also be bad. So, this is coming to us from PCGamer.com. Are new world players getting each other banned to win wars? Champ, do you want to take this one?
All right, so this ain't a new world problem. This is a gamer problem.
Yeah.
Where did we go? What do you feel good about if you don't earn it? I'd never understand this concept. Earning the battle, winning the war. There were people getting to know who the name of the leadership was, and they were sending an X number amount of complaints against them and getting them banned prior to a war so they couldn't participate in a war.
That's not fun.
What's wrong with y'all, man? I mean,
it's the parenting. It's the parents.
2 weeks. Two damn weeks, and you already... Why can't y'all just play the damn game like it's supposed to be played, man? Stop ruining stuff.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is that is not something Amazon could have ever thought somebody was going to do, right? Like, there is nobody in an office that went, but what if they use that to ban people from wars? Because nobody has thought about it. But a gamer will figure it out. Y'all gamers are something... Wait, we gamers are something else. We find every little nuance to a game and break it, right? But this was not, as far as I'm concerned, this was an Amazon problem. This was a gamer being a gamer problem, and they reacted to it. And it sucks.
Yeah.
So Amazon actually came out in that same article, and this said, a representative from Amazon Games provided the following statement to PC Gamer. We do not ban, or we do not auto ban based on player reports. All player reports are reviewed by hand by our teams before any action is taken against a player. We know there's been some confusion about this and that it's been made worse by players getting some inconsistent or unclear responses from our teams. It's just important that we earn our players' trust, and we'll aim to do a better job of communicating more clearly going forward.
I don't believe it.
I don't know how to take that. I don't believe it. That feels like something of... I'm sorry, but that feels like something of... That's like someone managing the president's social media account. Not to bring that in at all, literally at all. But you know what I mean? Like you have the dude, and then you've got a team who manages that. Like, this doesn't feel like what? I'm sorry, but I want to see... I need an example there. I need an example of, give me someone who was banned, you know? Don't give me their legit name. You don't want to out them. But give me context to that, because that doesn't feel right. I'm sorry, but that doesn't feel right.
There's no way that they reviewed that fast and then ban somebody. I don't believe that for a second. It was automated. You can't make me believe anything, dude. I don't care what. Same thing. I just don't believe it. That's just my stink. There's no way.
There are, so we called it out. Day one, 700,000 people who wanted to play the game. There's like 30 people on the community management team at Amazon. 30 people, 700,000. You have got to create an algorithm, an automation in order to protect the community, right? In order to find these individuals, the AFK spawners, the individuals that are trying to ban the incorrect names or the offensive names. You have to have built-in algorithms to do this. And again, they meant well. Amazon means well, but there are people out there amongst us who will weaponize that information. Right. They find out what that is, that edge, right, that limit, and they weaponize that. And that's where we're currently at. What is Amazon to do? They're not going to hire 700,000 community managers. They have to build better algorithms. So this is the symptom of what we're going through.
So then part of that, too, that same article, this came from Reddit, which. You'll take that with a grain of salt. This came from Reddit. Quote, so my company has a war today and the company we're going to war against reported our top players so they would get a temporary 24-hour ban and not be able to participate in the war. Another one said, 50 people in my 100-person company are now banned. I don't know if that is, if that's, I don't know if it's true. Obviously don't know if there's any validity to that, if it's true at all.
Well, I mean, if one person can get banned, if you got enough people, if you got whatever the algorithm is, it was 15 people that needed to say you were doing something wrong and that algorithm kicked you and they had enough people to do that, but do the math, you would need 15 people. So how many times you're allowed to do that against somebody? You get where I'm at. I mean, there's a lot of numbers that we don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I just feel like the algorithm was set up that way. Gamers figured out how to use it to their advantage, and it's a thing. They'll fix it, but the problem with it, and I agree with some people, like they should have anticipated it, but how do you anticipate everything? Holy right. God, man. Do you the infinity of variables that gamers will find to tweak. They're already gold farmers. Why? Can't y'all give us a week? I don't want to see your damn message in chat.
Yeah.
What'd it do, bruh? Get out my damn game. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's crazy.
You know, one thing I love about gamers is that they will push every boundary. And if there is anything, if there's a leak in the boat, they'll make sure to let you know. So that way you can fix it. And at the end of the day, it's just going to get stronger for it. So in that regard, I'm glad this was found. It's super shady. And quite frankly, I think you're half the PvPer you claim to be, if that's what you have to do to win. but you know, that's
well, and it's not unique to New World. Right now, here's a pool that's happening right now. Call of Duty just launched a different cheat mechanism.
Anti-cheat,
that's anti-cheat, right? That's analyzing cheaters that are currently in Call of Duty. Like, this isn't New World specific. Right. There are communities that are based off of finding what that algorithm and what that equation is, and they're going to exploit it. It happened in Call of Duty. They're doing something about it. OK, well, here we are at New World. Mm-hmm. They see that this is happening and they're addressing it.
Right.
Edgewood has a good comment in chat. It to be fair, it's not unique to gaming. It's people in general.
And
unfortunately,
preach.
I think he is very, very correct.
People suck.
People can suck. And it's like, I mean, imagine if all the time it took for players to figure this out, imagine if they were logging or fishing during that time. Imagine how much higher their logging or fishing would be right now. Just play the damn game and quit being cheaters and dishonorable. It's just, ugh.
I remember the old COC jokes we always used to say. Cash, I don't remember it. What did we always say? Don't be a dick.
Oh, yeah, just don't be a dick.
Exactly. There you go.
Super easy.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah, but I mean, unfortunately, it's like climbing Mount Everest to some people nowadays and not be a dick. It's so much easier just to be toxic and mean.
Yeah.
When it's free to just be kind.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just be kind. It doesn't cost you anything and it doesn't hurt on the back end.
Yeah.
Whatever.
No, I'm with you. And like you said, and we've talked about it before, remember there's somebody else on the other end of that person. And
yeah, absolutely.
Like, why don't we as a community try to be better? I mean, why can't this game be known for having a great player base who look out for the other players? I don't understand why it's such a novel concept. I served just like Sullis did in the military. I was willing to die for the freedoms of the people of this country. And we can't even play a video game without people cheating or treating people like garbage. You know, I will not be in community chat. I've never been in it. As soon as I get into a game, and this ain't just this game, World of Warcraft, ESO, any game I'm ever in, I never stay in general chat because I don't need that. I deal with that all day at work. You know what I'm saying? I deal with that out in public. I come here to experience a game and be with good people. And that is why I love the fact that we are surrounded. This company is a bunch of great people of different levels of game style play, right? We've got Grog, who is a ridiculous person when it comes to gathering and selling. Guy runs around in a mining outfit and looks like some crazy dude from the mountains. It's amazing, but that's his niche. You know what I'm saying? And I love the fact that we have such a diverse group of people, men and women, people from all over the world in our community, and we represent them with respect, and we represent them by helping people. There's not one lore seeker that would run by somebody that needs a heal and wouldn't heal them. Well, Nepthin. But I mean, we'll get to that later. Hey, by the way, hey, Nep, how you gonna steal kills from my wife, homie?
Is he in chat?
Yeah, he is.
I see you, Nep.
That's actually one of my favorite things to do. I'm not kidding you. I love running by and hearing a melee going on, and I just kind of pop around the corner. If the person needs a heal, I just drop a heal on them real quick. Wave. Ragzog and run off. Freaking love that.
Sweet roll.
It's so much fun. Yeah. Sweet rolls and cheese rolls and more cheese.
Hey, you know what else is fun?
Lore.
Yeah. You ready for it?
Yeah, buddy.
All right. Let's go check this out. Cash got a new one for us. This one's on the Ancients. Be right back.
Lore lesson. The Ancients. Lore page. Found in Arcturus. Regarding the ancient guardians of Aeternum, it is clear that these beings worship ancient society, but are not ancients themselves. The statues around ruins like Arcturus and others of its magnitude indicate the ancients had four arms and a split face, of which these skeletons that guard the ruins have neither. We can only be left to conclude that the skeletons that shamble about ancient ruins are those of heretics and traitors to their own humanity in revering beings like the ancients. A missive. Governor Sullis, please receive the following dispatch you requested for intelligence regarding the odd statues and column formations we have discovered in our travels. Our movement continues to the north through the rustic settlement at Everfall. Prior to reaching the bustling little town, we encountered a most troubling discovery. As I'm sure you've noted in your own observations on the island, a tower in ruin stands high into the sky in these southern regions. We reached these shattered obelisks, as the locals call it, nearly a fortnight ago. What we saw can nary be explained. The tower is indeed shattered near the top, but the fragments are held in stasis by some unexplained otherworldly power. The sight of it from its base is downright terrifying, to be frank. We all felt some sort of deep resonance in our chests as we approached, and much of the expedition was concerned for their safety had we continued forward. The decision was made to send an envoy of volunteers to investigate the anomaly further, despite the many undead creatures guarding the site. Suffice it to say, they returned post-haste, but not before discovering an entrance to some sort of catacomb near its base. The power, they said, was beyond their comprehension, and they reported a dismal feeling as if they knew they would perish if they descended. This was acceptable to the expedition's leaders, as we too felt that we would have been outmatched had they continued into the underground system. Perhaps we will revisit the site in the future once we become more seasoned and knowledgeable of the land around us. Sir, with regard to the undead creatures of mention above, I feel the need to explain. These protectors, they are not of this world. I suppose it should not surprise any of us at this point in our journey. However, their mere presence will chill your very bones. Skull and bones, adorned with the armors of civilizations not seen in our world for centuries. From what we were able to record in our journals, armors and weaponry from the Principate, perhaps as early as the reign of Augustus, were found. On others, the Red Cross of the Poor Fellow Soldiers of Christ, yet others wore the primal battle dress of the Scandinavian seafaring conquerors of old. Speculate no longer, my governor. This supernatural land has seen the likes of thousands upon thousands of years of pioneers before us. What's more, these bone guardians walk the perimeter of these ancient ruins in a detailed and predetermined patrol. If any of our party encroached, they were met with an alert and watchful eye. On two occasions, our envoy was forced to fight these guardians. By the grace of God, they survived, but the description of how these dead soldiers were defeated is preposterous. Despite their armors, one could clearly see a blue pulsing stone beneath their breastbone. It seems to be the nucleus of their existence, and it wasn't until this stone was destroyed that they would stop their advance. These blue stones embedded in their bosoms have the same radiant glow of this Azoth substance we've encountered on numerous occasions. The more of this substance within their chest, the more difficult they were to defeat in combat. Even after besting one of them, with shattered limbs and no plausible mode of ambulation, it merely pulled itself along with a single arm, dragging its twisted torso towards its target, hell-bent on destruction. The loyalty of these protectors never hindered their hatred of our mere presence. They were undoubtedly fierce in their will to safeguard the site. Perhaps these patrolling undead warriors are the soldiers on the losing end of some large conflict years ago, only to be pressed into eternal service. Only one conclusion is to be drawn. These guardians are protecting something, perhaps a great source of power. Our travel saw us north and into the settlement of Brightwood Hamlet. As our convoy visited merchants for supplies and crafters for much-needed repairs, I overheard the most interesting of conversations in the marketplace. Outside of a hastily placed researcher's tent, a rather studious gentleman was speaking in hushed tones regarding his travels. His eyes shifted to and fro, making it quite obvious he didn't intend for his message to reach curious ears. Well, this prompted me to do what I do best: listen without permission. I managed to gather the gentleman's name, William Heron. It was then I realized that this was a historian that Dr. Bombastus suggested we seek. I continued to snoop his tail from the concealment of the adjacent stall. Mr. Heron described his travels of the Northern Territories in detail, with particular interest paid to his discoveries surrounding relics of a distant race called the Ancients. These Ancients were said to have had knowledge in harnessing the power of the Azoth on the island. This is when my epiphany occurred. These long-abandoned ruins, the skeletal guardians, their fierce protection of the sites, the Ancients. The Ancients is what they protect, or perhaps their secrets, their research, or their magic. He continued to spew his findings as I shuffled for a better place in which to gather this intelligence. Of course, in my haste, my foot found the metal stake and rope securing the canopy over my head. Much to my fortune, I caught my stumble with an air of agility, but not before startling the good Mr. Heron, halting his story like cattle at a cliffside. "Got your footing now, sir," he quipped. "Well, you might as well come out of there in the open and listen to my tale. There are no tripping hazards out here." I was a bit befuddled by his clearly astute perception, but I sidled up to hear the rest of the story nonetheless. "You must be Cassius," he declared. I received a missive from my colleague, Dr. Bombastis, that you may come calling. I nodded with noticeable embarrassment. Well, don't be shy, Cassius. This information is crucial if you intend to brave these wilds. So listen intently, there's no need to skulk about. William Heron, astronomer, historian, and seeker of truth. He continued his tale. The ancients. The race was theorized to have built a thriving civilization long before any human had ever reached Aeternum. These ancients, as depicted in the weather-worn statues found throughout the island, may have been adorned with four arms and two faces. Yes, two faces, Governor. He spoke of these ancients' ability to harness the power of the Azoth natural to the island and how they may have used it to prolong their lives. It was the dangers of experimenting with this Azoth, however, that may have led to their demise. The Azoth seems to feed upon the intent of its user. It has the ability to exacerbate its effects for good or for evil. This may certainly explain the stark difference between the blue substances we found in the Red Plague that besets many of the beasts we found upon the island. Is this corruption we've discovered the result of experimentation with Azoth for more dastardly purposes? Mr. Heron was not certain, but he didn't deny the inquiry. He instead raised an eyebrow and shot a smile in my direction, as if he was impressed by my conclusion. Mr. Heron proceeded with his findings, revealing more of his research. He had uncovered clues in the depths of several ruin sites of a great conflict taking place during the reign of the ancients. The ancient guardians, he speculated, were the soldiers on the island during that conflict. He mentioned several sites of interest, but he warned of their dangers, adding that none of them should be explored without the employ of highly trained fighters. The first was a settlement deep in the swamps of the South and East territories called Reekwater. He explained how a place known as the Pools of Eternity may have been the birthplace of the ancient guardians, where the ancients transformed human soldiers into restless sentries using unnatural rituals. Mr. Heron also described local talk of a missing expedition in the area of a dig site called the Lazarus Instrumentality in the region of Eternal Pools. In addition, he mentioned a good location to start research would be at the monument at Morningdale, the best preserved location of the ancients he has found to date. The issue, he exclaimed, was getting to it. The last location is one we are somewhat familiar with, the Shattered Obelisk, he called it. The ruined tower held in stasis outside of Everfall with the chest thrumming force. He believes this very tower may hold the secret to the ancients' technology and the purpose of the many obelisks scattered throughout the island. To my dismay, sir, I am short of time. Our expedition has resupplied and they await my completion of this correspondence before our journey to the north. It suits me, however, as I have some theories on these ancients of my own. Allow me the discretionary time to ponder these thoughts and craft a detailed analysis for you. I surmise there may be much more at play here than what appears at first glance. I shall send a runner with an update when we reach a suitable camp upon our journey east. The locals tell of a most curious bridge on the trek that may provide some further details on the ancients we seek. Your most loyal servant and friend, Cassius Kilborn.
Woo! Oh, yes, sir.
It is so good.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, gents. Glad everybody's enjoying them. Super fun to put together and tying them into the company. It's been a blast.
That was awesome.
So I got to say this. I'm saying it.
All right.
Jeffy says I have the strangest boner right now.
Oh man, oh man. Well, friends, thank you so much for tuning in. This was a Lore Seekers podcast for New World. We hope you enjoyed yourself, and if you did, we want to know about it. Leave us your review. For every 5-star review we get right here on the show, we'll give you a shout out right here. And we do, we have one special thanks to TC
24 from the US of A for his 5-star review. Champ,
you gotta mute.
Let's try this again. Hey, I did your thing, didn't I? Whoop, whoop. Hey, it's okay. What to do, bruh? Anyway, if you want to call us, 765-382-6961, please keep your message to 1 minute or less. Email us at loreseekerscast@gmail.com. You can find our podcast, written lore lessons, and articles at loreseekerscast.com.
You can follow us on social media. Follow us on Twitter, Jibs at JibsIRL. You can follow Champ at Champ2504. Follow Sullis at Sullis, and you can follow myself, Loreseeker Cash, and the Cash is with a K.
You can also follow our second Lore Seekers podcast show called To A Turnum, where yours truly presents our company's storyline in a role-playing setting. And we also talk community management and company leadership in New World and gaming abroad. You can also follow us right here on Twitch at twitch.tv/LoreSeekersCast. Back to you, JB.
Friends, thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you have a good week. And we'll see you here next week right here on Lore Seekers. Take care. Have a good one.